Right, and I'm running out of ink, am I not? Where's the thingy?
Where's the big one? I lost the...
So the important thing is that if I have an...
Okay,
I'll
get you another pen.
Yeah, no, I have more here. Sorry. Don't worry, Sam, look. I have a single particle observable, and say I know it to be diagonal in certain basis, alpha, and but I want to express it in a different basis, n, then... the important thing is that the second quantized operator is that, but then I can convert my creation and annihilation operators to the other bases. So say I want to go to from a basis alpha to a basis n. So this could be positions, and this could be bonding versus antibonding states in the example of the hydrogen molecule, or for electrons in a box, this could be where in the box the electron is, so again positions within the box, and this would be wave vectors, anything like that. So I can just use that coordinate transformation to write C alpha dagger as sum on n of C n dagger, and then let me just get the order of things right, n alpha. And then I could write that one as sum over m of alpha n cm, which is the same coordinate transformation. I can have to just take the adjoint on either side of the equation, right? And then that becomes sum on alpha n m of n alpha alpha all alpha alpha m. So I just wrote everything to the left. C n dagger C m. And now I realize that this is just because I'm assuming that all the bases I'm choosing are complete bases. That's just sum on n and m of n all m c n dagger c m. And this is all one, of course, the single particle, while this is all the many body operator. So you can see now it's got slightly more complicated, because now instead of just counting how many particles there are in each state, I have to also take into account the possibility that I remove a particle from one state and put it in another, and simply see what the matrix element of my single particle operator would be for going between these two single particle states. Okay? So, and that's the... Right, so with this formula, we can now write any single particle operator in terms of second quantized field operators for any many-body system. Okay? So, in any basis. So, for example, I mentioned earlier we knew how to write the kinetic energy in the basis of wave vector states, but I could also write, say, the angular momentum, anything that is a single particle property, whatever basis I'm using, by using that. So, for example, a very good example, and now you're going to forgive me for going from sums over states to integrals over states. Of course, there's a lot of trickery in that, but it's conceptually the same thing. So one very important example is the position, the kinetic energy in position representation, right? So if I want to write that, T, so that's exactly that operator where I just looked at how many electrons there were with each possible wave vector, but now I have to really do a double integral over all possible positions, and then I calculate the matrix element of the kinetic energy the single particle kinetic energy between every pair of positions, and then I have the operators that remove a particle from one position and put it in another one. And now, of course, actually, you see, this is what happens when you're preparing a set, and I was going to do it quickly, but it's actually quite nasty, because really what you have to put here is a delta function. Because this is a differential operator, so it doesn't connect points which are far away. It transports a particle from one point to an infinitesimally close point. So actually it becomes a single integral. And then it really is just an expectation value. So it's not a great example in the sense that it doesn't really show how you connect states which are separate. Well, now I define these field operators. They are usually when the index is continuous, you call them field operators. And when the index is discrete, creates an annihilation operators. But they are the same thing. This creates a particle in a state which is a delta function centered at R, which is an eigenstate of position, which would, of course, have infinite energy, because, but anyway. So that would be the kinetic energy operator in position representation. Okay? As I said, it's not a great example, because it involves a delta function and so on. There are others. Right, and now, finally, to conclude, what happens if you have an operator that depends on more than one particle? So obviously in the Hamiltonian we wrote at the beginning, there's a very clear example of that, which is the Coulomb, the interaction between particles. And that's of course crucial. Because if we have just non-interacting particles, really all this wouldn't be worth the trouble, because ultimately the isolated determinants themselves are the eigenstates and it's easy to manipulate them algebraically. The problem is when you have interactions, then the isolated determinants are not the eigenstates, they are just our bases. And dealing with combinations of them is just horrible. So that's why this is very useful. But in order to write the Hamiltonian with interactions, we need to know how to write an interaction term, so a term that involves more than two particles. So it's again a very simple generalization of that. And with this we'll conclude, because I'm going to assume that there are no interactions involving more than two particles at a time. For example, for electrons in a material, there are interactions between the electrons and the ions, which are just some external potential, because we don't treat them as quantum particles, and anyway they are distinguishable from the electrons. And then there are Coulomb interactions between the electrons, which are pairwise. Okay? Of course, all the electrons are interacting with all the other electrons, but it comes as a series of terms, each of them involving two electrons at a time. So this is actually very general. Once we can write that type of term, then we're done. So suppose I have a two-body operator which connects two-body states. So let's call it super index 2. So let's say that we know how it connects states alpha and beta, i.e. we know we know it in some, so here I'm writing in second quantized notation, we know these matrix elements, okay, so in first quantized notation we know how it would act when the first particle is in state alpha and the second particle is in state beta, okay? And we assume that it is diagonal in that basis. So for example, the Coulomb interaction. Let's say I have an interaction potential, an interaction V, a pairwise interaction, which we write as V of R1, R2. Okay? So that means that if I have my first particle at R1 and my second particle at R2, Sorry, I didn't mean to say that this, oh yes, sorry, so V of R1, R2, then I know what the value of that interaction is. Okay? So for example, V2 of R1, R2 could be the Coulomb interaction, which is 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught. Say it's particles with one electron charge of R1 minus R0. Okay, an interaction potential, which the K is like the inverse of the distance between the particles. Okay? So how would I write that in second notation? Well, we can write it as follows. So O in second notation would be 1/2 of the sum over alpha and beta, and now I do in the example of the Coulomb interaction of O alpha beta 2. Sorry, I didn't mean to put a hat there, because notice this is a matrix element of the operator with a hat between two states, so it's just a number in the same here, right? But here it's right to put an operator. And then C alpha dagger, C beta dagger, C beta, C alpha. Okay? So again, we can derive it in the same way as we derived the earlier ones, that it has to be like that. So first you remove the two particles that are interacting, and then you put them back in. And it's important to do it in that order, otherwise it would change the sign of the interaction. And again, you can go back to this later determinants to prove that it's that way. And the point is that then I can write any many-valued interaction made up of pairwise interactions, such as the Coulomb potential that we have there. That would be 1/2 of the, well, if it's really a Coulomb potential, it's an integral over all positions rather than a sum. Of this term, which for the interaction potential would be V2 of R1 R2 times the operator that creates the particle at R, R prime. The operator that creates the particle at R primed, and then I remove first R primed and then R. Okay? And then I can put the 1 over 4 pi in the explicit formula, and then it will become E squared over 8 pi epsilon naught integral d cube r, integral d cube r primed, 1 over r minus r primed, c r dagger, c r primed dagger, c r primed, C R, where these are operators that create and annihilate a particle at positions R and R prime. So at the single particle state, which is a delta function centered at those positions. And then again, if I want to work with operators which are in a different basis, for example, I want to write the Coulomb interaction in momentum space, which might be very useful if I have a weakly interacting system. So say if the system is very dense, the kinetic energy will be much more important than the Coulomb energy. So then it's sensible to work in the basis that diagonalizes the non-interacting part of the Hamiltonian, if I'm going to treat the interaction as a perturbation. Then I would want to work with creating and annihilating plane wave states, right? But all I have to do is here transform these two plane waves, but writing it as sum over all the plane wave states of the bracket between position r and plane wave k, ck dagger. Okay, and similar transformations for all the others. And this bracket, that's just the projection of a plane wave with vector k on position r. In other words, it's the position representation wave function of this plane wave. So it's 1 over L to the 3 halves e to the I k dot r, right? So basically, this each of these will give me a sum over k. So there will be a k1, k2, k3, k4. And all these come to the front with the sums over r. And I get all these phase factors. But actually, in the end, I'll get lots of delta functions from these combinations. And I get a sum over three wave vectors. So I get rid of these two sums over r. And I just get the sums over the wave vectors. And I think, in fact, in the end, only one sum over wave vectors, only three sums over wave vectors survive, because the other one would only exist if the interaction depended on the absolute positions of the particles, not just their relative distance. Okay? Anyway, so there is a bit of calculation involved, and I encourage you to try to do that, to try to insert all these transformation rules and go from the expression of this interaction or some arbitrary interaction in real space to the expression in momentum space. This is something that's very, very useful to do. Right, and now just to conclude, and really, really to conclude, I just wanted to say one more thing, which is that very often, well, look, there's lots and lots of different techniques for solving many body problems, and they all start from writing it down in this notation. So with this kind of thing, with already written down the Hamiltonian, you know, the Hamiltonian that I wrote at the beginning, which had kinetic energy, which is this bit, and then it has an interaction energy, which is that bit. So my Hamiltonian, H, was T plus V. And if I write it in this way, it's already all in second quantized notation. And of course, it's not solved, because you realize that say a plane wave basis would diagonalize the kinetic energy. Oh, you have something here now?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay, well, we have to conclude. Sorry. No. No, we overrun a bit. I just wasn't sure when...